Well, how many of you in the last year or two have either interviewed for a job or been part of giving a job interview? And we, yeah, oh my gosh, a lot. That says something about us, right? I remember the first time I had an interview for a job. I was in high school, and I was interviewing to be a waiter. And I remember going in and meeting the boss and being intimidated. And the first time you do an interview, right, you're just a kid, and you don't really know what to expect, and you're not even sure what are they looking for. But the older you get and the more you go through different interviews, you kind of understand how the process works. You realize that they're looking for certain skills. They're definitely looking for some sort of experience. So you want to show them that you have experience, or there's certain accomplishments or achievements in the area that you're looking at that you have. There might be certain personality traits that you need to sort of put on display that they might be looking for. Even your appearance is important in job interviews, right? Sometimes you need to dress up a little bit nicer for the job interview. Maybe you need to cover up the tattoos, right? Maybe you need to show the tattoos because it's that kind of job. Or maybe the interview is on Zoom now, right? Some of us have done those in the last year and a half. But even there, you have to think about your background, and are they going to see my messy apartment, or that I'm still wearing pajamas? But the older you get and the longer you do this, the more you figure out how to prove yourself to the person that's interviewing you. How to show them that you're the right fit for the job. How to show them that you're better than all of the other candidates that they're considering. Now today, we're kicking off a 9-week series, and we're going to begin with a story of a really important job interview. And it's a story that actually addresses a much larger tendency that we bring, not just to job interviews, but to really every facet of our lives. It's something we do every single day we go to school, or every single day we go to work, or in every relationship we have, or in every way that we think about ourselves and our place in the world. Now, it's a story that's going to be familiar to some of you. If you grew up going to church, you might have heard or read this story before. But there's actually a surprise twist or something that's unexpected that happens near the end of the story. So we'll talk about that as well. Let me set the stage. It takes place in the Old Testament, or the story is told in the Old Testament book of 1 Samuel. It takes place in about 1000 BC in ancient Israel. This is when Saul is the king over Israel. Now, actually, the main character of the story we're going to read today is a guy named Samuel. Samuel is the leading prophet in Israel at that time. So the prophet is the person that God often talks to or talks through to the wider people. In fact, Samuel was the guy who had anointed Saul to be the king over Israel many years ago. But now Samuel is receiving a new message from God. And this is what happens. 1 Samuel chapter 16, starting in verse 1. The Lord said to Samuel, "How long will you mourn for Saul, since I have rejected him as king over Israel? Fill your horn with oil and be on your way. I'm sending you to Jesse of Bethlehem. I have chosen one of his sons to be king. You are to anoint for me the one I indicate." Now, let me tell you a little bit about Saul, because this is surprising news to Samuel. When Saul first became the king of Israel, he had all the potential in the world. He had all the marks of greatness. He came from a well-known and well-respected family. The Bible describes Saul as being more handsome than anyone else in all of Israel. It also says he's really tall. He's an imposing figure. In fact, it seems like he's taller than anyone else in Israel. He's a farmer, so he's a man of the people, right? The people can relate to him, and he can relate to them. But he's also a really brave and well-known warrior. In fact, one story from early in Saul's reign is this. Saul is out in his field farming and with his oxen, and a messenger comes up and brings word that one of the cities in Israel has been attacked by their enemies. Saul slaughters the ox in front of him, cuts it up into pieces, and sends it by messenger to the 12 different tribes of Israel and says, "One of our towns has been attacked. If you don't rally behind me to defeat our enemies, I'll come do to your ox what I just did to mine." And the people rally and they marshal the troops and they go into battle and they win this great victory under the leadership of Saul. He had everything going for him. Now, maybe you know somebody like this who has the personality and the gifts and the abilities and the charisma and the leadership potential, and people just sort of rally around this person. It's like that person, you know, those people that are like good at everything. Like they're good in sports, they're good at their grades, they're good at their jobs. They just have all the things in life. You know, like Adam Coleman type people, you know what I'm talking about, right? I mean, and you look at them and there's something about you that just loves them and you want to follow them, and kind of deep down you also envy them. That was Saul. And yet, if you were to back up a few chapters and read some of the stories that took place right before this, Saul made some pretty big mistakes as king. Saul had some failures as king. And so God now comes to Samuel and says, "It's time for a new king. Saul's not cutting it anymore. Saul's not a good fit for the job anymore. We need to go find a new king." Which, if you're Samuel at this point, you have to be thinking, well, where do we go from here? Like, Saul was the best we had. He was the cream of the crop. He had everything going for him. And if he's not fit to be king, well, then who is? How are we going to find the next person? And God's like, "Don't worry about it. I've already made a decision. I've already found someone. Go to this little village. Meet this guy named Jesse. It's one of his sons." And so look at what happens next. Samuel did what the Lord said. When he arrived at Bethlehem, the elders of the town trembled when they met him. They asked, "Do you come in peace?" Because he's a prophet. And whenever the prophet shows up in your village, like, you're kind of worried. Like, what did we do wrong? What's going on? And Samuel replied, no, don't worry about it. "Yes, I come in peace. I've come to sacrifice to the Lord. Consecrate yourselves and come to the sacrifice with me." And then he consecrated Jesse and his sons and invited them to the sacrifice. Now, Samuel probably doesn't actually meet the sons at this point. He's just saying to Jesse, right? "Hey, I've come to do this sacrifice. We're going to have a big celebration tonight, sacrifice celebration, potluck to follow. Like, bring your sons because I really want to meet each of them." Verse 6, when they arrived, Samuel saw Eliab, and he thought, "Surely the Lord's anointed stands here before the Lord." So you see the scene, the people are all there. It's probably the potluck afterwards. He's introducing himself to Jesse. He's already met Jesse. "And Jesse, would you introduce yourself to all of your sons? Tell me a little bit about each of them." And Jesse starts with the oldest, Eliab. And we find out in just a second that Eliab is good looking and he's tall and he has that look. And maybe Jesse is telling him about all the great things that Eliab can do. And it just becomes so obvious to Samuel at this point. This is the guy. I mean, he's got the qualities that we're looking for. This is the guy. God has made it really easy for me. But look at what happens next. Verse 7. But the Lord said to Samuel, "Do not consider his appearance or his height, for I have rejected him. The Lord does not look at the things that people look at." The Lord does not look at the things that people look at. That is a powerful sentence. That is a powerful idea. I mean, if you miss everything else today, don't miss this. The reason it's so powerful and significant is because that's exactly what Samuel was looking for. He was looking at all of the external things. He was looking for those natural abilities that the next king would have. He was looking for all the measurements of achievement and success. He was looking at appearance, right? How does the guy even look? And just like in any interview, he's taking these guys and he's judging them, and he comes to the very first one and he looks at Eliab and he hears about his abilities, he hears about his achievements, he sees his appearance, and it's just a no-brainer, right? If those are the criteria for greatness, if those are the criteria for being the next king of Israel, Eliab has it all. He's swimming in those things. And so the only conclusion Samuel can come to is, this is the guy. Surely this is the one that I should anoint. And the reason this is so important is because we do the same thing all the time. We look at other people and we judge them by the same criteria. And even more significantly, we judge ourselves in comparison to other people by those same criteria. We look at people who have way better skills and abilities than we have. We look at people that have better accomplishments and achievements. We look at people that are seemingly more attractive than we are. And we tend to think they're somehow better. They're somehow greater than me. They're somehow more important. They'll be more successful. They have more potential. They can make a bigger impact in this world. Here's the internal dialogue that I think we have all the time, right? I'm not as smart as he is. I'm not as good looking as she is. I'm not as athletic as he is. I'm not as skinny as she is. I'm not as gifted or talented as he is. I'm not as organized or on the ball as she is. I'm not as strong and charismatic. I don't have the personality that he does. I'm not as bubbly and outgoing as she is. I'm not the kind of leader that he is. I could never be the kind of parent or mom with the perfect children like she is. And we compare ourselves to other people and we evaluate ourselves. We evaluate our potential. We evaluate our worth according to criteria that God never established. Because the Lord doesn't look at the things that people look at. So what does he look at? What is God looking for? Do you know what he tells us is most important? He says it in the next line. People look at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. You see, his criteria is immeasurably different than ours. When he looks at you and when he looks at me, if we were to have an interview with the God of the universe, his criteria for greatness, his criteria for who he made us to be is very different than ours, because he looks at the heart. Now, exactly what does that mean? We'll explore that question in just a second, but let's see what happens next. Verse 8, then Jesse called Abinadab and had him pass in front of Samuel. But Samuel said, the Lord has not chosen this one either. Jesse then has Shema pass by, but Samuel said, nor has the Lord chosen this one. Jesse had 7 of his sons pass before Samuel, but Samuel said to him, the Lord has not chosen these. So every single one passes by, and maybe Samuel has even let Jesse in on the process at this point. I'm looking for something in particular. I'm going to select one of your sons for something big. And every single one passes by, and it's almost like with every single one, God is saying to Samuel, nope, that's not it. And I don't even think God is speaking out loud. I think it's just something happening in his gut. He's getting this gut feeling from God. Nope, not this one. Nope, it's not this one either. Nope, it's not this one. And he goes through all 7 of his sons, at which point Samuel's got to be really confused, right? God, I thought you told me it was going to be one of these sons, but if you've rejected all of them or these are not the right guys, well, then what do I do? So look at the next verse. So he asked Jesse, are these all the sons that you have? Oh, wait, they're still the youngest. Jesse answered, He is tending the sheep. So Samuel said, "Send for him, and we will not sit down until he arrives." So there's one other son. In fact, Jesse forgot about him. That's how insignificant he is. We don't even know his name. It's not spoken. He's just referred to as the youngest. When Samuel says, "Hey, make sure you're at the potluck tonight and bring all of your sons because I want to meet all of them," Jesse forgot about him. That's how insignificant he is. So Samuel says, "Go get him. We'll wait and look at what happens next." So he sent for him, and he had the son brought in. He was glowing with health, and he had a fine appearance and handsome features. Now, this is a bit of a twist. I mean, this is a little ironic, isn't it? I mean, Saul is described as good-looking and handsome, and he's tall, and he's talented, and he has all of these natural abilities. And when Samuel begins to look for the next king, he starts looking for all of those things because that's what I'm supposed to look for. But God scolds him and says, no, those are not the things you're supposed to look for, right? You're supposed to be looking for somebody that's the opposite of Saul. That's what we're expecting to walk through the door. And so then when we hear the story, oh, there's one son, and he was the youngest, and he was the most insignificant. We don't even know the name. He was forgotten about, go get him. Like, we're set up for this huge contrast. He's going to be the anti-Saul, the anti-Eliab. It's almost as if we expect this puny, little wimpy, like bumbling, clumsy boy to walk through the doors. That's going to be the message. The moral of the story, right? The ugly duckling always wins in the end. But that's not what happens. The first thing we hear about him is he's glowing with health. It's actually a Hebrew word that refers to your skin, your complexion. It means you have really good skin or really good complexion. It can also mean that you've been working outside all day and you have a really nice beach volleyball tan. The next thing we're told is that he's literally, this word for fine appearance, it's literally a Hebrew idiom that means easy on the eyes. And just in case we don't get that, it follows up to say he has really handsome features. And then in the very next story about this unnamed boy, we're not going to read it today, but a few verses later, here's the first description we get of him there in verse 18. "I have seen a son of Jesse of Bethlehem who knows how to play the lyre," which is a musical instrument. "He is a brave man and a warrior. He speaks well and is a fine-looking man." So we're told three different ways. He's really good looking, right? He's brave. He's talented. He's a musician. He can speak really well in front of crowds of people. He's this amazing warrior. And you see what's going on here? From all outward appearances, who is he like? He's just like Saul. He's another golden boy. Like, he has everything, to which Samuel's got to be super confused. Like, what do I do here? Because he has all the stuff you just told me not to look for, God. And that's when God nudges him. One more time. Look at the story. "Then the Lord said, rise and anoint him. This is the one. And so Samuel took the horn of oil and anointed him in the presence of his brothers. And from that day on, the Spirit of the Lord came powerfully upon," and this is the first time we hear his name, "David." For the next 9 weeks, we are going to dig into the story and the life of this guy named David. But let me tell you why I think this introduction to the story, this important interview process for the next king of Israel, is so significant. Because you and I, we think and act a whole lot like Samuel. We think that what makes us who we are is wrapped up in all the external things. It's in how we look. It's in how we dress. It's in our abilities. It's in our gifts. It's in our leadership potential. We have to look a certain way. We have to talk a certain way. We have to pray a certain way. Oftentimes we feel like we have to have a certain personality that other people are looking for. Or I have to be a certain Enneagram type that I'm not. Or I have to have certain gifts and abilities that I just don't have. Or certain achievements and accomplishments that it seems like they have, but I don't. And we envy the people that do have those things. We look at them and we think, if I was only like them. And God is looking at us saying, you are focused on the wrong things. Those are not the most important things about you. Those are not the things that I'm looking at. The Lord doesn't look at the things that people look at. The Lord looks at the heart. Now, the funny thing about this story is that it's not like David didn't have any of those external things. That's what we learn at the end. He does. David has the appearance. He has all of the abilities. He has all the skills. He has all the charisma. He has all of these qualities. We're going to see next week that pretty quickly he has a ton of achievements and accomplishments as well. He has all those things. And as somebody growing up in the church, I heard and read stories about David, and he was this larger than life figure, right? I mean, he was just, he could do it all. He was William Wallace. He's like the warrior poet, right? He can slay his enemies. He can woo the ladies. He can lead an entire nation. I mean, he can do it all. He's larger than life. That's the way we think of him. That's the way Michelangelo sculpted him. And the problem is, I can't relate to that. He is nothing like me. I don't have any of those things. And do you see what I'm doing? I'm comparing myself. Once again, I'm looking at all of the outward, external things that God doesn't look at. Now, it's true, David has all of those external things going for him, but did you know that David is deeply flawed as well? David has a temper. We'll see that. He's extremely violent. He abuses his power. He's lustful. Virtually every relationship David has with the people that are closest to him is dysfunctional. He doesn't know how to love people very well. Only when something is taken away from him or he's threatened does he actually begin to show real emotion. David's incredibly flawed, maybe even more so than Saul, which brings up the biggest question of all, right? Well, what did God see in David? I mean, if God doesn't look at the things that people look at, if God looks at the heart, when God looked into David's heart, what did he see? I've been thinking about this question for a long time. And it struck me that I think the answer is hidden right in the middle of this story. Do you remember when Samuel says, do you have any other sons? And Jesse says, oh yeah, they're still the youngest. What does he say next? He's out tending the sheep. David's out in the fields taking care of the sheep, feeding the sheep, protecting the sheep, caring for the sheep, loving the sheep, leading the sheep, chasing after the sheep when they run away. And David learns at a young age just how dependent, utterly dependent sheep are on their shepherd. The shepherd's the one that leads them to water to drink. The shepherd's the one that leads them to the meadows where they can find rest. The shepherd's the one that carves out a safe path for them. The shepherd's the one that, even when I walk through the darkest valley, you'll be with me. You're there to comfort me. You're there to protect me and take care of me. And night after night after night, I've got to imagine as David is taking care of these sheep, he's cultivating a shepherd's heart, which is just another way of saying he's cultivating God's heart. As he learns what it means to love and take care of and protect these sheep, he learns what it means for God to love and take care of and to protect him. When things are going well and when they're not. Because he's going to have some really cool stories that we're going to celebrate. And there's also going to be some deep scars, some embarrassing, shameful stories we'll read. And in the ups and in the downs, through all of that, David has this very simple trust in God as his shepherd. I think that's what God was looking for. That's what's most important. Whatever abilities you have, whatever skills you have, whatever accomplishments you have, whatever appearance you have, God will and can use those things in your life. And he will in beautiful ways and sometimes in very unexpected ways, but that is not what's most important. What's most important is what's in our hearts. Do we trust in God as our shepherd? Are we listening for his voice in our lives? Do we recognize our utter dependence on him? That's an invitation for all of us. That's available for all of us. You see, if I focus on all the external things, I don't have much to learn from David because I'm nothing like him. But the good news today is that the Lord doesn't look at what people look at. The Lord looks at the heart. Let me pray for us. God, we pause this morning to consider the ways that we compare ourselves to others, the ways that we see other things and wish we had more of those, the ways that we feel like we don't measure up, that we're not worthy, ways we stumble and fail. And God, I pray this morning that you would give us your heart and your vision for who we are in your eyes. I pray that you would help us to trust you as a shepherd in our lives, that we might wake up tomorrow morning and every morning this week just asking to hear your voice, to follow you wherever you would lead us, and to trust you that when we do walk through those valleys, when things are tough, you'll be there with us. Lord, help us to have hearts that chase after you. We pray this in your name. Amen.